Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast. My name is Paul Ellis, and I'm your host for these programs about developments in this fast-growing industry. The textile and fashion industry are responsible for 8% of global CO2 emissions, second only to oil and gas. 73% of clothing products end in landfills or get incinerated, and 63% of products are plastic. The women who make up 80% of the textile industry workforce need decent working conditions and economic growth opportunities. These are the social and environmental impacts about which today's podcast guest creates daily awareness and an urgent call for industry transformation. Marcy Zaroff is the founder and CEO of EcoFashion Corp. She devotes her days to advocacy with consumers, corporates, and policymakers for end-to-end sustainable textile manufacturing. Her efforts, along with those of many others, are calling for a more sustainable apparel industry. Those are working, and I'm very glad to have her join me for this conversation. Hello, Marcy, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast.
Hello, Paul. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a real pleasure to have you join us. We're going to dig right away into what probably a lot of our listeners are not familiar with regarding your industry, but we're going to educate them today. So here we go. Ready?
I'm ready. Bring it on.
Good. All right. And you've been doing this for how long now? When did you start this advocacy role?
Yeah, when I was 30 years. Okay. 30 years ago, I coined and trademarked the term eco-fashion. So I've been in the trenches pioneering the transformation of this $3 trillion Titanic industry for a long time.
Okay. Well, listen, now the textile industry is actually, or the textile exchange, I'm sorry, as a representative group, right, for the industry, is calling for a 50% reduction in carbon emissions by 2030. Now, one important way to accomplish this is to change the material sources from which textile fibers are made. So in addition to certified and recycled cotton, Marcy, what are other plants that are being used to make more sustainable clothing fibers?
Yeah, so it's a great place to start because it's where our supply chains start in the fashion and textile industry. We start at the fiber and material level. That's called tier four. And actually, the textile exchange, that's really our area of focus because 70% of social and environmental impacts are happening at that fiber and material level. So my wheelhouse has always been cotton, as you mentioned, regenerative, organic, and recycled cotton. Cotton as a natural fiber, right? Is breathable, is obviously something that our earth, you know, depends on because cotton is one third of the world's textiles and, you know, represents about little less than 3% of the world's agriculture, but a very important crop because it's very nutrient dense. So I'll just start by saying regenerative cotton is right now, you know, a big priority for a lot of companies out there to leverage the power of that one third of the world's textiles to actually rebuild soil health as a solution to climate change. In addition to cotton, we also have other natural fibers such as hemp. We have linen, obviously any kind of sustainable animal fibers like wool and silk, right? And we at Textile Exchange have a number of certifications that support the, you know, the fiber and how it's being, whether it's being grown or it's being managed so that, you know, we're looking through that lens of responsible sourcing and production in addition to ethical, positive outcomes for humans and for nature, as well as for climate. So in addition, there is a group of fibers that are known as cellulosic fibers, where we actually can take things like beech or eucalyptus. And these are woods that are actually now turned through what's called a lyocell process into a super soft man-made circular fiber closed loop fiber, and lensing is probably at the forefront of this with fibers like Tencel Lyocell or Modal, right? And now today, because circularity is becoming so important in our industry, using the old to make the new, there's a lot of focus around textile to textile recycling and looking at not only how can we take the old and, you know, move away from all virgin synthetics, but use the old synthetics to actually, you know, through mechanical and chemical processing, make new fibers. And that's, you know, there's a lot of focus on that. And then the last thing I'll just touch on is agri-waste. You know, I come out of the food industry. That was really where I started my career. And so what gets me very excited is how do you connect the dots between food and fiber? So we're seeing a lot of innovation around things like pineapple waste, banana waste, coconut, orange, algae, mushroom, right? You're starting to see, you know, where we can take, you know, plant fiber and food ingredients and actually turn them into fibers through different types of processes. And I've been working on a project specifically in Costa Rica that we're calling Piñacot that is actually taking that, you know, that waste from the leaf and extracting the fiber. And then through different processes that sort of mirror what we do with hemp, you were able to extract all that fiber out and then, you know, break it down and spin it into yarn. So lots of innovation opportunity for material innovation. And as an industry, I think the two biggest buckets are regenerative and circular.
Wow, that's a lot of different material sources that regenerative fibers are being made out of. And of course, the current annual growth rate of sustainable fashion is 23% annualized. That's correct, I assume. And it will be a $33 billion industry by 2030. Now, is this growth happening throughout the industry and or across generational consumer groups as well?
Yeah, so the Textile Exchange, we have over 800 members across all areas of, you know, the industry from mass to class. So we have your biggest retailers and companies out there, your Walmarts and Targets and H&Ms, and, you know, you have PVH and VF. I mean, these are really the big players out there. And then you have your high-end and luxury brands and even your small, you know, and mid-sized enterprises that are all at the table. So, yes, this is something that I think everybody is now on the train. And they're, you know, drinking the proverbial, you know, sustainability Kool-Aid. They're making their science-based climate targets. They're talking the talk around transparency and traceability. And why they're doing this, I would say, is three reasons. So you touched on the consumer. So first of all, the younger consumers, typically the Gen Zers and the millennials, they've grown up with the internet and they can pull the curtain back and they can ask the questions, who's made my clothes? Where is it being made? What's in it? And they're demanding transparency. And now with, you know, regardless of what's going on at the government level, the administration, you know, there is an awareness out there around climate action. And they want to see that the brands and companies that they're supporting are moving in this direction. And at the same time, there's a disconnect in that desire and that pent-up demand with fast fashion, which is obviously proliferating a lot of this impact. So what's happening is everybody's at the table now, and what used to be competition is becoming cooperation. So the biggest companies and the, you know, midsize and the small, we're all looking to collectively reduce our carbon footprint through coalitions, buying, you know, groups. And materials matter is a new uniform certification or standard that is going to be released next year through the Textile Exchange, consolidating all of our standards to be able to speak to, you know, both the sourcing and the storytelling of how every purchase matters. And I think at the end of the day, it's about voting with our dollars. It's about giving the consumer affordable and accessible options. And I think that's where we're moving towards as an industry. But it's a heavy lift and there's a lot of work to do.
That's so encouraging to hear that what you're saying about this type of industry benchmarks for sustainable fashion. In fact, your data says that 87% of Gen Z and millennials who are asked are demanding transparency, and maybe they're volunteering this information. They don't even have to be asked about their demanding transparency and climate action in their apparel purchases. So how are current regulatory issues impacting the choices that consumers are making about sustainable fashion? I'm assuming there's a labeling process, and as you suggested, many ways that the industry is now tracking this.
Yeah. So first of all, the EU has probably been, you know, at the forefront of kind of setting new policy requirements that the industry is finally going to be held to account on. And that kind of fire that's being lit under the industry is part of what's propelling the demand for regenerative and circular fibers and materials. So we have this convergence going on around that consumer demand for transparency and accountability and climate action, married with now the policies that are underway, married with, you know, this crazy geopolitical environment that we're in, and looking for risk mitigation and resilience in every single touch point of supply chains. So one of the, I think, policies that has been released in the U.S. kind of as a starting point is called the EPR, the Extended Producer Responsibility Act. And that really is about talking to the about the end of life. And so how do we redesign fibers and materials and processes and products to be thinking about what that, you know, circular system looks like versus a linear system where we just keep producing into the everything ends up in the landfills, right? So, you know, and that's about, you know, where it used to be when I started my career, these sustainability initiatives were being driven by marketing. And now that traceability is so paramount and the substance behind it has to be verified. So what used to be driven by marketing is now being driven by product design and development teams, right? So we also are looking at things like the Fashion Act, the New York Fashion Act, which is saying, okay, we need that, you know, to see that transparency and the impacts along your supply chains, you know, and how are you, you know, reporting into your science-based climate targets. And so when you look at, you know, the extended producer act, or you look at the Eco Design for Sustainable Production act out of Europe, or, you know, this work in California now is starting to penetrate other states where we're looking at, again, responsible textile recovery that could be part of policy. All of these things are just still at their infancy, but they are out there now. And in my career, you know, we've never really had strong policy. So I think the conversations are heating up. The companies are planning into this. The design teams are now looking through a different lens when they're picking fibers and materials. So, you know, we're all holding hands here to, you know, start moving towards these policies that are underway, but they're still, you know, again, at the beginning stages. And now with all the tariffs and kind of the bumpiness in the global markets and the uncertainty, you know, some of the goalposts are pushing back a bit. I don't believe these big companies are walking back their commitments at all. In fact, I have front row seats to many of them, because as chair of the board of Textile Exchange and a co-founder, I do hear, you know, what the pain points of the industry and all the complexities firsthand. I would say that, you know, the commitments are there, but the timelines, you know, may take a little longer for us to get there.
Okay, well, you've already mentioned traceability. Let's incorporate into this next question AI data and blockchain in terms of helping brands future-proof their ESG data reporting compliance. How are these new technologies focused on these problems and these issues?
Yeah, so there are a lot of SaaS platforms out there now that are doing traceability in supply chains at different levels of the supply chain. So for instance, you have now at the farm level, we have a partnership with an organization called Soil Information, which are soil sensors at the actual farm gate that unlock carbon and other data points that can be verified in real-time data. There's also satellite testing at the farm level through technology that can give you data points and measure to that. And so then you move up the supply chain. And historically, a lot of companies relied on what's called the Higg Index, and which is, you know, otherwise known as Worldly, and which gives kind of data points at the factory levels. And so we at EcoFashion Corp and many companies are embedding in these traceability platforms that go from seed to shelf that actually are able to not only give potentially an experiential interactive journey through a QR code at the end of the product life on the product itself for the end consumer, but throughout the process, a way to extract data at every touch point of the supply chain and even embed in, as you mentioned, generative AI, which gives that ability to splice and dice data through measurement and reporting mechanisms to validate that data and then provide it for, you know, investor reports through marrying it with Climate IQ data and or taking it all the way to the finished product and being able to communicate through infographics and other user-friendly consumer-facing ways how those impacts, you know, affect the end product. And so that, you know, the end consumer can start to feel engaged. Investors can understand this isn't a marketing proposition. This is really true, deep, and very important work that we're all doing because business as usual in our industry cannot continue. I mean, we are one of the largest or leading polluters in the world of air and water. And, you know, when you start to look at that proliferation of fast fashion, the impacts on wastewater, energy, climate, chemical use are, you know, the magnitude and multitude of these impacts are deeply affecting human and planetary health. And so I think everybody is aware of that now, finally, in all the years I've been doing this work. You know, it was always, I was the crazy one. And I pinch myself every day that at least the awareness is there now. But again, we have a lot of work to do and a long way to go. And traceability is a paramount component of that process. I'll just end with.
Well, that's great. And of course, you've mentioned just in this question or in answering that question that the farming end of the industry is resetting now. So tell us about reset farming and vertical supply chains and how they're transforming the industry from seed to shelf.
Yeah. So what major corporates are looking for today is, you know, data that proves there are positive outcomes for nature, climate, and people. And so the RESET project that we started, which stands for Regenerate the Environment, Society, and Economy Through Textiles, is a way to work with farmer producer organizations. And in our case, we work throughout India in various communities and various states of India to actually start the process of transitioning farmers from conventional methods of cotton farming to more regenerative practices, organic practices, and even biodynamic practices. So what that entails is at the farm level, which is where the seeds represent life, everything begins. We don't farm with any GMO seeds because the GMO seeds put the farmers on what we call the pesticide treadmill. They get dependent on the chemical cocktails that go in conjunction with the GMO seeds and the heavy irrigation. And that dependency that farmers get, you know, into ultimately starts to degrade the soil, right? Because it's toxic chemicals. When the soil starts to break down and you start destroying the ecosystems and the biodiversity in the soil and the water starts running off with toxic chemicals into the water systems that the farmers depend on, you're creating a system that, you know, almost becomes a treadmill in the sense that the farmers eventually have to get heavier doses of these chemicals because the bugs start building resistance. And when that happens, as the bugs build resistance, you know, the farmers start leveraging their farms to the banks in partnership with the chemical and seed companies. And so the system is so broken. And what's happening is in India, farmers are committing suicide because they're going into despair. They break down the soil health. they, you know, their own health is compromised. The plants get compromised. And ultimately, as the bugs come back, they have to increase their cost structure to afford these pesticides. And they're paying like 50, 60%, you know, interest rates on the loans they're taking to afford these chemicals. So the whole system's broken. So RESET is about rebuilding soil health and biodiversity and nutrients in the system through crop rotation, cover cropping, green manure, animal agriculture, agroforestry. And not only are we building soil health to build stronger plants so they're resistant to bugs and we don't have to use the chemicals and GMO seeds, but it's also a major solution to climate change mitigation by sequestering climate or carbon out of the atmosphere. When you have healthy soil, you have sponges in the soil through the ecosystem that actually, you know, sucks that carbon. And when it turns to dirt through conventional agriculture, it reflects the carbon back into the atmosphere. So, you know, we're really looking at cotton, not about just doing less harm, but about doing more good with RESET farming. And we've achieved NOP, NPOP, GBT, Demeter certification, and Regen Agri, which is the certification of, you know, also the soil health initiative that takes our farms from, you know, conventional cotton to more sustainable cotton choices.
That all sounds fantastic that these programs are underway. It's a lot of acronyms there. We may ask you to send us some more information on how we can get the full names of the organizations or protocols out to our followers. But for a moment, let's just turn back to the circular economy part of this whole process. Tell our followers how they can turn waste into worth through apparel and accessory upcycling and recycling.
Yeah. So anyone who has kids and they're, you know, under 20 or 20 to maybe 40, there's a huge movement now for vintage and for new business models around circularity, right? I'm a huge advocate of Rent the Runway. There's the Real. There's, you know, swapping and thrifting and right. And I think even, you know, my son lives in Madrid and the whole city comes out every Sunday to, you know, support a circular economy and secondhand markets. So in that regard, you've got one path. And the other is, how do we take the old and make it new, right? So, you know, remaking and repurposing and, you know, textile to textile recycling. And, you know, I've seen everything from turning scraps at the factory level into new yarns, you know, breaking it down and spinning new yarns, to being able to collect old garments. So, you know, you'll see garment collection units in your local city sometimes, or even in some major retailer stores. And, you know, when you donate your clothing, you know, it can go to the vintage stores, but it also can go back to be able to be sorted through AI mechanisms. A company called Colio in Spain, as an example, they have a state-of-the-art, you know, technology that breaks down and sorts the incoming fabrics or garments, and then fails them, and then is able to send them to be broken down and made into new yarns and upcycled into new products like tote bags or other kinds of products if you lose some of that softness or strength. So, you know, there's ways now that we can take the old to make new. There's a big focus on that. And as I mentioned earlier, agri-waste. You know, we used recycled cotton in a recent program we did for Billie Eilish at Universal Music Group, where we made a t-shirt collection that sold at Target, Hot Topic, and Urban Outfitters stores nationwide. You can still buy the Billie Eilish product at retail. Now The Weeknd also is available from our 80% certified organic cotton and 20% certified recycled cotton yarns that we made proprietary for that program. So across the board, I think it's, you know, even especially in the synthetic market, to see, you know, the waste turning into like plastic bottles that historically was kind of a starting point with recycled poly, breaking the plastic down and turn it into a polyester fiber, you know, RPET. So all hands on deck. Lots to do.
Well, listen, Marcy, there is an awful lot to do, and it's been great speaking with you today. Let's tell our followers where online they can go to learn more about Eco Fashion Corp and how they can get in touch with you regarding the issues that we've discussed in today's episode. And by all means, we want to post some things along with this program where they can do their own research as well. So anything you can send us will be helpful that way.
Absolutely. So ecofashioncorp.com is our website. We also have a couple of house brands. One is called Farm to Home, so farmtohome.com. We have yesand.style. And on Instagram or on social media, I'm at Marcy Zaroff. You can email me at marcyzaroff@ecofashioncorp.com. And then, of course, at yesand, at farmtohomeorganic, and at ecofashion.corp are all additional handles that we share lots of content and ways to engage.
Great. Well, thank you so much again, Marcy Zaroff of Eco Fashion Corporation, for joining us today on the Sustainable Finance Podcast. I'm Paul Ellis, and we'll see you for the next episode. Thanks very much, Marcy.
Thank you so much, Paul, and everybody for being here.